It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 26th day of September, 2023. Do you remember the 26th day of September? I got a story that goes with that. No, I know it's the 21st. Sibling rivalry is a hell of a thing. I'll tell you. It is the 26th day of September. This is the Horn. Head on .live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time Madcap multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the Great Globe Round, and whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. And whether you're listening to the podcast or listening live, please accept my humble and sincere and abiding broad and deep thanks for being part of this wondrous little community, almost 20 years old. 20 years old come the fourth day of February, 2024. We got another anniversary coming up next month. The 24th of October was the first internet-only Horn broadcast, October 24th, 2005. Hard to believe, you know? But anyway, if you're listening to the podcast, please like every episode, mash the daylights out of that subscribe button, leave a comment for the algorithm. Thank you, True Blue Digital, who frequently leaves a comment and makes sure and is trying to help spread the visibility of the program, liking and subscribing and commenting. Thank you so much. I'm not sure which member of the community you are, but thank you. Really, sincerely. Need a lot more people doing what you're doing. Whether it's Podbean or Apple Podcasts or Podcast Republic, wherever. But yes, please like and subscribe. Like I said a couple of weeks ago, or a week. It's probably a week ago. Problems at White Rose Society. I don't know if it's been hacked or what, but it is impossible for me to log on there. I've tried it every night since, and I simply cannot get logged in so that I can upload the program to Podbean. Podbean, White Rose, which is a pity. I had a note from our friend Norman, who said, I listened to the podcast on the White Rose Society podcast page. No podcasts have been posted there since September 19th. I can't get the podcast from any other source, including your head-on website, as my very ancient iTouch can't open those other podcasts. Which is kind of wild. And obviously, Norman's not going to hear this, so I have to write back. And I will. But The White Rose podcast was actually a larger audio file than what goes up at Podbean because, well, Podbean sucks. And so we had to limit the file size. I don't know. Internet stuff that I don't understand. It's above my pay grade. I don't have one pay grade. Brother Deaconesa says, leave a comment on Spotify and or Apple Podcasts, please. Yes, do. Weird things are happening at TuneIn. Last night, Brother Deacon Asa told me that TuneIn was running a French language podcast. Sacre bleu, nom de Dieu, sacre iliac. I got nothing. I don't know why. I don't know if it's people screwing up around there or us being messed with. I don't know. But at any rate, I will write to Norman and see what I can do. That said, if you are listening live, please feel free to pop over to the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany Real-Time Madcap Multimedia Extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room, where the early arrivers are waiting to greet you and absolutely love newbies. Nobody has to ride a goat or learn a secret handshake or anything like that. But Anatole's there, and so is Ralph's, and so is Squeaky, and so is Theo. Hey, y'all! And they're all being capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist, Chief Mathematician, and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon. Okay? So that's all the basic housekeeping. Couple of letters to get, notes to get to get us started, but I'm going to tell you the September song. Just, every time September rolls around, and this is weird because usually it's like, bang, first day of September, I listen to September by Earth, Wind, and Fire. Never Taylor Swift's version. I love Tay-Tay, but that's just wrong. And I haven't, I've got to just put it on back here on the monitors after the program and dance or something, because I'm afraid that the universe might tilt off its axis if I don't. But my kids are all grown, but they're still pretty amazing kids. And two of them, Berg and Doodle, the two youngest, you know, they're like 14 months apart. When they were little, people thought they were twins. Hard to believe how long ago that was. Don't want to get all misty-eyed this early in the program. Oh, hey, Susie! Ralph's just told me Susie's listening tonight. Susie, it's so nice to know you, that you're there. That's wonderful. Hey! Sibling rivalry. They still argue. And those two will get on a hill and die on it. And so they got into it. They got into it over the lyric to the Earth, Wind, and Fire song September. And Doodle was steadfast in informing her brother that she knew damned good. Now, everybody, we've got the internet here. This stuff can be checked out. I didn't know that September was written by the same songwriter who wrote the theme for Friends. Imagine that. She's in the Songwriters Hall of Fame. But at any rate, Doodle was unjustifiably convinced that it was Do You Remember the 23rd Night of September? And Ferg said, no, it's the 21st. No, it's the 23rd, I know it. Uh-uh. It's the 23rd. So then Doodle, in telling me this story, says, you know, I realized that Ferg has a lot of brain capacity for remembering stuff, and he is a little on the neurodivergent end of things, and so I decided, yeah, my brother may be right. And lo and behold, it was, and she said, and then I realized, and this is an actual line, oh my God, early F-bomb coming. Oh my God, I fucked up the parrot. Yeah, that mental leap from realizing the line is the 21st night of September to I fucked up the parrot. You hearing that the first time probably doesn't make any more sense to you than it did to me a couple of days ago. But it eventually did, because my precious doodle, she's a wonderful mom. Oh, excuse me, again with the hiccups. Too much gin on the cornflakes. We know that. It's got to be a delight to listen to. Oh, this is fun. You do not want to hiccup while taking a drink of pop, because it goes down the wrong way and it feels like you're swallowing a ball of fire. Anyway, now, like I said, it wouldn't make any more sense to you than it made to me. But she went on to explain, and this is where the laughter came in, she went on to explain that she had helped a friend of hers teach her parrot to sing. And the song that they taught the parrot to sing was, "Do you remember the 23rd night of September?" You can't correct a parrot. And so that's why my daughter said, "Oh no, I fucked up the parrot." So somewhere out there now, there is literally a parrot who sings the wrong lyric to an Earth, Wind, and Fire classic. And that's just the world we live in. Oh, thank you. Susie says hi back. So, just a little something. And a couple of things early on to get us started. I had a note from Matt in San Francisco. Hi, Robin. Roxanne, which do you prefer? I'm slowly getting to be known as Roxanne around here, and I like it a lot. It makes me very happy. But I'm not changing the name of the program, because that would just be confusing. But thank you for asking, Matt. Matt says, and again, the subject line was trauma. Oh, wait. I'm screwing up something fierce. Because every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so, as a consequence, thanks go out to our 26th day of the month subscribers and early contributors. And that means thank you to Emilio. Thank you, Emilio. And thank you to Ralphs. And thanks as well to David and Cecilia. They got us started on this evening's version of the ongoing challenge from Larry in Liberalville, which I hope Larry has heard by now, that we are moving swimmingly along. So thank you both. Thank you all. The fundraising goal stands, therefore, at $300, so $175 to meet Larry and Liberalville's challenge, which if we do it every night this week, we will miraculously, because this is a community-made miracle. Got a couple of those. I got another one to talk about. But if we raise $175 more dollars, that means we get the $200 match from Larry and Liberalville again and again. And if we do this every night this week, all the way to Friday, the $200 get doubled, and every evening we get the $200, then anything above the $200 becomes a 10% bonus. So, for instance, if we get all the way to the usual $300 fundraising goal, there would be a $10 bonus on top of that, courtesy of Larry in Liberalville, if I'm doing the ciphering correctly. We got a $27 bonus yesterday evening. And this, James, thank you so kindly to James. Every time I dip back in, we're in a bloody hole here. Hope it helps get things on track, and it did, because James wiped out the entirety of the deficit from last week and the week before. All of it. So the only thing we're facing now is getting all the way to Friday and meeting Larry and Liberalville's challenge, and we will finish the month fully funded, all the bills paid, and a humongous sense of relief for your humble hostess. I'm not pronouncing H's anymore, I guess. I must be French. No, I'm a Swiss miss. Thank you, James. I cannot thank you so much. You are fantastic. And thanks to everybody who is working so hard to make all of this resolve and keep all of this going into our anniversary month of October. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Now, back to Matt in San Francisco. I need to check in on my mental health. No matter how much therapy, progress, or success one has in life, or how old one gets, when you grow up with mental illness in the home like I did, you always have a part of your consciousness that says to yourself, am I losing it? Or do others process this event the same as me? So I was listening to Tom Hartman, who was describing basically how Russia has control over the Republican Party. He's right. And I'll add editorially, we've been saying that for years based upon the fact that back when the Russians hacked the Democratic server and turned over all the information to WikiLeaks, which then took all the information and made it public, they also hacked, and it seems to have just disappeared into the ether, they also hacked the Republican National Committee server, which they did not release information from. And I think that probably accounts for how they got control, as Matt points out, over the Republican Party. And Matt continues, and their shared goal is to destroy American democracy as we know it. I thought, well, this is too heavy of a downer for me right now. Maybe I'll watch Rachel Maddow instead. It's the interview with Cassidy Hutchinson. She's inspiring. That'll lift the mood of the day. I was choked up and teary-eyed before Rachel got through the introduction. I thought, this poor young woman. She'd worked her ass off, no political connections, and made it to the assistant to the chief of staff to the president of the United States by her early 20s. By comparison, I was going to back-to-back AA meetings in my early 20s, so props to Cassidy. Sure, she's movie star pretty. I'm sure that helps. I mean, I'm gay, and I can tell she's a beauty. Heaven help her around Republican lech power-hungry politicians, but anyway, she didn't just fall into that job. She no doubt had been outworking and outsmarting men for years to get there. I think gay men have a peek into discrimination in the workforce. I know I had to work twice as hard, be twice as smart, to be taken only half as seriously as the straight guys who's perfecting repeating what the boss just said and said a little differently and paired it back to the boss. As the interview went on, I was just like, Jesus Christ, the behavior, the situation she's witnessed, how it all related to what it looked like from outside at the time. Matt says, I was feeling traumatized, like I was reliving some abusive event. Anyone else? Was that just me with a broken processor? Well, if it's a broken processor thing, I will answer, Matt, that we must have a lot of broken processors. Because this stuff is all traumatic as hell. I think on any given evening of this program for about 3 hours. It's a little like therapy for all of us. As we sort of trauma dump and try to exercise it, if you will. This is Tuesday, not Wednesday. Don't go there, Robin. Then the responses from the Republican men and her eloquent answers. It was basically, I'm an intelligent woman with unquestionable character that testified under oath to the Congress of the United States of America under threat of perjury. I stand by what I say, and I would encourage them to testify under oath to anything that is in the book which is consistent with my congressional testimony. I mean, Matt continues, come on. I'm about to go out and buy a T-shirt with Cassidy Hutchinson's picture with the verbiage, saving democracy one woman at a time. The way she talked about coming out and people being helpful on the other side. If that's not Reverend Moon and Jim Jones cult-like shit, I don't know what is. And I'll add, Matt, by way of agreement and counterpoint, how bad is the cult when you have to come out about the fact that you're leaving it? Coming out is not... The original term coming out was oftentimes in terms of young women. They were cotillions and coming out balls and things and gowns and whatnot. And it was an introduction to polite society. But it's a matter of public disclosure of something that has been not a matter of discussion heretofore. Coming out gay. Coming out trans. Being able to say that one is battling through addiction. Or that one's marriage has fallen apart. These are all forms of public disclosure, and the fact that she had to come out as having formerly been involved with that bizarre cult in the White House, well, yeah, you're right, Matt. That's it's cult-like shit. So I guess, Matt says, anyone else triggered and reliving trauma and really feeling for all the trauma Cassidy's been through with the 45 crazy train folks hunting for her? Anybody else feeling that? And I don't think these are rhetorical questions. Matt would like an answer. Matt would like for you to write in, or later on call if you want, and talk about that. What does it mean to watch all of these existential threats to our attempt at democracy and be... feel powerless in the witnessing? Matt concludes saying, and people still want to vote for Trump. This society has got some soul searching to do. I don't think most people are tuned into how close we are to losing our democracy. I mean, I hope I'm wrong about that. I really do. My kind don't fare well when the autocrats take over. No. There's a lot of our kinds who don't fare well when the autocrats take over. Yom Kippur just passed. Time of reflection and atonement. I wonder what Yom Kippur was like for any of the concentration camp capos. The Jewish collaborators in the concentration camps. Who survived? I wonder what Yom Kippur was like for them. It's kind of like, I wonder what... I wonder what the Trans Day of Remembrance is like for Caitlyn Jenner. I wonder what the anniversary of Stonewall's like for gay Republicans. like George Anthony DeVolder Santos, King Kamehameha III, Lord Nelson, Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. That's an obligatory Star Trek reference. I get it, man. And I think it would be a great conversation. And it's kind of where I was going last night, and we touched on it a little bit talking to Clarence. You gotta get these kids plugged in. As my friend Allie pointed out last week, God, she's brilliant. This 2024 presidential election is the last boomer dominant election. I think she used a different term, but and in fact, I'll go to that. I'll go to what she wrote here in a little bit. But Matt, what you're feeling isn't crazy. Because I think a lot of us are feeling it. It's horrifying. And yeah, if you are black, Jewish, Hispanic, Muslim, gay, lesbian, trans, Asian, if you're anything that isn't Euro origin originated, white, Christian, cis, straight, preferably male, you're not at the table with these assholes. You're on the menu. So I think that is a very good starting place. Flavio's being a bit of a crank. Love you, Flavio. Cassidy's still a Republican. She said so. She's selling a book. I wish they would all sell a book after the criminals are in jail. Alexander Vindman's selling a book. Adam Schiff is selling a book. Jamie Raskin is selling a book. Everybody's selling a book. Call me a cynic. Can we throw in curmudgeon too? But, no, I get it. But the reason they're selling the book is because they were paid money to create the book. By publishing houses who think that there is a market for selling the book. And so the authors have a vested interest in trying to get people to read them. Or maybe in the case of the folks you mentioned, they're trying to get people by any means possible to understand the gravity of the situation. If it's by reading a book, good. You don't have to buy it. Maybe they'll have it at the library. You can go and read it for free. In this instance, it's not so much the capitalism. As Lou says, or if you're 1% Syrian or a Mets fan. You know, they came for the Mets fans, and I didn't say anything because I was not a Mets fan. Don't take me there. Flavio says, I wish all the Dems were more worried about the real peril this democracy is in and convincing the people. How do you know they're not? I mean, I don't want to argue, but how do you know they're not? Jamie Raskin seems pretty damned worried. Cassidy Hutchinson, Republican though she is, was not at ease about all of this. The story about Mark Meadows' smoky suits and his dry cleaning bill, well, I guess that's the lighter side of treason. But it's still awfully damn serious. Cynthia in the Bay Area. We touched on this a little bit yesterday on More in Monday. But noting that Well, Trump and the news media. So Trump says that after he's reelected, the media he deems critical of him is going to pay a big price for it. So if I were the head of such a news organization, I would go all in with news stories highly critical of that filthy rat fucking asshole with the goal of change. I love it when Cynthia gets her back up. I would go all in with news stories highly critical of that filthy rat fucking asshole with the goal of changing the minds of some people who may not realize what the fuck they're voting for with Trump. But I'm not in such a position, and so do you want to bet on how the major news media is going to respond? I think they'll tone it down and start praising the fucker instead. I'll be watching and hoping I'm wrong. And like I said, there is a rumor afoot that Ken Buck is looking at the congressional exit and hoping to get one of those great big golf tournament-sized money checks from CNN. And Ken Buck is a maggot. Ken Buck is a feed-em carcasser. But CNN thinks it would be great to have him on there giving commentary. Maybe, I don't know, next to Van Jones? Or sitting there having a chatty chat with Anderson Cooper? It's worrisome. Because how are you ever going to dispel the And that's a good question, too. John in Central PA, Cassidy Hutchinson. What the hell's wrong with switching to Democratic? We're the real patriots. It's our party who treated her well after this ordeal and had her back. Is she still going to stick with that fascist party? Is there a process? Is this because she couldn't sell her book if she switches? What happens when Trump is the nominee to her party? I just don't get it. There are a lot of never-Trump Republicans. More than I suspect meets the eye. You know, 35% are of the GOP are the, this is the hill I'm going to die on, ride or die, maggots. And the rest of them are like, or almost the rest of them, are like, well, I'll vote for him if I have to. Better than any Democrat. And there are people who institutionally want to rebuild, I mean, how often do we eat dirt and run rabbits? When we hear a Democrat, not casting stones or anything, but just off the top of my head, one of the first names that comes to mind is Nancy Pelosi. We, America, needs a strong and viable Republican Party. Do we? Really? When was the last time the Republicans did anything good? Nixon signed the Environmental Protection Agency into existence. So there's that. Nixon was actually the last president to propose a national living wage. Or guaranteed basic income. But he's still a dangerous fascist crook. Mussolini made the trains run on time, for sake. Yeah, I'm going to get there, Lou. Oh, Cynthia, I missed that part of your program. Sorry I didn't hear all of it yesterday. My doctor ordered me to get more exercise, so I took a good long walk and missed your comments. Sorry. Don't apologize. Don't you dare apologize. A certain humble hostess needs to get out and take nice long walks. They'll be really, really pretty once with the fall coming on. A certain humble hostess needs to roll out of bed in the morning and get her skinny butt over to the gym and just get on the treadmill and... I actually talked to my therapist about that. I got the about going to the gym. It's a whole thing. But yeah, I get it. Take those walks. Take those walks, Cynthia. because it's worth repeating from one day to the next. He's got a kill list. Nitwit Nero has it, because there's none of these. There's none of these out. He's talking about wishing for another older time, you know, back when America was great, I guess, when he could have had, when he could have ordered, the time never existed, when he could have ordered General Mark Milley to be taken out and shot. It's like one of the plot points from Catch-22. So, maybe, Donald Trump has a kill list. You know, Richard Nixon had an enemies list. And people like Liddy and Haldeman talked about some people needing to be taken out. But Donald Jackass Trump, son of a Klansman, has a he'd like to see General Milley taken out and shot. Maybe he'd like to see Rachel taken out and shot. Lawrence O'Donnell, Chris Hayes. He's probably mad enough now that he'd like to see Rapey.
You put me that
taken out and shot. So, I don't know. You know, you're not going to break through to the hard cases and the dead enders, the 35%. If they, you know, if they saw him having, if they saw the Donald Trump eating his extra piece of cake with two scoops of dead baby on it, they'd be okay. And it's a horrifying thing to realize. Steve says, Nancy Pelosi, I think what Pelosi probably meant is that we need a strong opposition. I just think the opposition to her has always been the GOP. Yeah. But honestly, until the rise of global fascism over the last 20 years or so, you had governments in Western Europe where there were liberals and more liberals. By that I mean Christian Democrats and Social Democrats and Liberal Democrats and but of course this does not apply to Mother England. They're Tories and they're Labour and they're liberals. I'm sure Claire might have something to say about that. Doggone it, Lou, you mentioned the Mets, and you knew what you were doing. Speaking as a Mets fan, Kevin says, I'm in favor of them coming to take me away. After all, us Mets fans keep following the team, expecting a different result, and getting disappointed each and every time. Perhaps they should just put up a picture of a Mets fan next to the definition of insanity. You won't have to worry much longer. October is coming, and Mets will not be playing extra ball. Are you kidding me, Flavio says? Americans don't read. Actually, most of the world doesn't read anymore. When I was a student in France, everybody had a copy of Le Monde or Le Figaro, all folded up in quarters in one hand and held on for dear life on the Paris Metro with the other hand while reading the paper. There were no cell phones then. Now the world's pretty much gone visual hieroglyphics. Maybe a more visual approach is in order. Well, and that's what that column by Will Bunch at the Philadelphia Inquirer was all about. We need major high-profile influencers headlining humongous, massive, cultural-like concert events saying, and when y'all leave here, go and vote. Make sure you vote, register to, and vote, register them to vote there at the place. And drive Nitwit Nero up a tree.
Yeah, they're registering those people to vote. at their hippity-hoppity concerts, the Riggers.
Kim writes in, I'm with Flavio regarding Cassidy. I have compassion for Ms. Hutchinson, and I do think that she has shown a great deal of courage for such a young lady, or any age, really. But as she said, she adored Trump. Adored. Let that sink in. I know. It's a cult. But imagine the type of character that would adore a horrible, despicable human being like Trump. She saw how he treated and spoke about women, much less other people. She knew about the Mexicans are racist, walked down the golden staircase. She witnessed his there's good people on both sides bullshit, but it took an insurrection to wake her up. And yes, she was able to get hired for a tremendously responsible position in the White House, but would she have been hired if she'd been, say, a mere average-looking woman and maybe a few pounds overweight? Now, Kim, you know I love you. But the most publicly visible employee of the White House was, for a time, that gimlet-eyed, currently governor of Arkansas. You know, Jethreen Bodine. That woman lied as often as she breathed. And while trying to not, you know, girl code, and not talk about another woman's appearance. Let's just say if there are two people in a room, if two people are in a room talking to Sarah Hustlebuck Sandbags, and they're standing on either side of the room, both people will think she's looking directly at them. Just saying. So I don't know if that. I'm horrible. I don't know if that one holds water. Or maybe it holds a lot of water. Kim. Now, I'm not saying I don't admire her telling the truth in front of the January 6th committee. What was her choice? Nor her current understanding of the danger to our democracy. And I also know we need heroes, but I think perspective is needed. And I think we do have perspective. And maybe. Yeah, the fact that she did adore him, maybe she has to say she adored Trump in order to establish her bona fides as not being some mole inside the White House. Because she's doing some seriously John Dean shit here. And, you know, there was never any, when John Dean finally broke, he did not do so having turned into an independent or converted to being a Democrat. Kim says, touche, Sarah Hustlebuck Sandbags, but she's an anomaly in Trump world. Think of all the anorexic blondes that surround him. Oh, white power Barbie. But then there's Kellyanne Conjob, Lady Skeletor. Flavio says she adored Trump, and then she says she has higher standards in men. I know. She had to have known about the Access Hollywood tapes. Maybe she thought it was hyperbole? I don't know. Flavio extending it, anybody who adores Trump probably adores all the racism, the sexism, the bullying, etc. too. She got to the point where she didn't, though. Come on, Flavio. You were raised Christian. You know the parable of the prodigal son. You'll kill the fatted calf. The shepherd will rejoice at the return of one sheep, though the other 99 were perfectly well behaved and stayed where they were supposed to. as a fairly modern person, the sheep stories never did particularly resonate with me. Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags, though, Stephen, New York, says we can't forget that she is her daddy's daughter. Oh, Lord, she is. I remember, what it was it 2 weeks ago that, 3 weeks ago that we had the clip of former Arkansas governor, presidential candidate, pastor, brother, minister, diabetes, baloney, cure, salesman, Mike Huckstervey, talking about how that after the 2020, after 2024, they're going to start shooting people. Yeah. And so I want to go back to something that my dear friend Allie said. She and Claire were engaging in a dialogue over on my page. And Claire had asked, basically, how the actual fuck is Donald Trump allowed to run again, and what does that say about the state of the USA? Allie responded brilliantly. It's currently being disputed whether Trump can run. 14th Amendment challenges from Republicans all over the place. Basically, if he's seen by the courts as having participated in insurrection, he can't hold office. It's a difficult challenge because it's hard to prove. Even the current cases against him don't directly charge insurrection, so these challenges are long shots. In terms, and this is really, really, a really good distillation. In terms of why he still has support to make him the front runner for the Republican Party, there are many factors, but three stand out to me. First is message isolation. A lot of people are in information silos where they're being fed propaganda and disinformation about this guy. It's easy to accept it if you're someone who supported him initially and continue to be in these silos, reinforcing that you have always been correct. Second and third are intricately related. You have a demographic shift where the silent generation is all but gone from the voting base, and Gen X is in full power-wielding age range. Their youngest are now 43. The oldest is basically my age. Gen X is more brutally conservative than they really get attributed as being. They're the Nixon and Reagan flavor of Republicans. They didn't have any real hippie movement, and their whole counterculture approach was based around being cruel badasses who didn't care about anything. At the same time, the nation as a whole is seeing a broader demographic shift where white folk are heading towards minority status. Queer rights have taken off within a single decade. Americans are less Christian every year, and a black man was president and soundly defeated two moderate Republican challengers. When you put those two together, you have a powerful collection of cruel people who see their culture coming to an end in the foreseeable future. It's already present in the attitudes of Gen Z and Alpha. So they're lashing out, embracing fascism, and looking for a strong man to save them. Trump is doing all the bad things to make their side win all over all else, which fits their cultural attitudes very well. He's saying the hateful things they believe out loud, making it culturally acceptable again. Electorally speaking, this is only a problem for one more presidential cycle. By the next one, 2028, you have even fewer conservative boomers around who, despite everything I've said about X, are still the more conservative generation overall, and Gen Z will be 30. She talked about this on the show. They're already more active in voting than previous generations, and that's likely to continue. The real threat from this faction, at least after next year, is going to be from direct violence. They will not simply accept Democratic defeat. They've already demonstrated this. And next year isn't really certain. We are one random economic crash or sudden health problem within the next 13.2 months away from a disaster with global implications. Someday I want to be smart like Allie is. Because that's a really solid analysis. And when she gets to the part about the real threat from this faction is going to be from direct violence. One little example. Now, I talked yesterday about the fact that various law enforcement branches are saying this shit's bad and it's going to get worse. 300% increase in threats on FBI employees. And this is not, I mean, this isn't a huge thing, but if you were the parent of one of these children, it would be the biggest thing in your world. Highland Park, Illinois. That's so heartland America that, yeah, Highland Park. A school there. Well, there was a photograph circulated of a classroom there where there's a pride flag hanging. That's all. It's just a pride flag. It's a sign of inclusivity. That everybody in that classroom can feel safe. And Chaya Ratchick, who was unmasked last year as the person, the animal, the monster, the vicious, hate-filled misanthrope behind an account over on Shitter called Libs of TikTok, circulated the photo of the classroom in her act of ongoing stochastic terrorism. It is focused almost exclusively always on the LGBTQ community, but not entirely exclusively. And no sooner had she circulated those photos then, lo and behold, a bomb threat was called in. See what I mean? When I said it doesn't sound like a big deal because, you know, you're not in Highland Park. I'm not in Highland Park. We don't have kids in Highland Park school. But if you're a parent, it's the biggest thing in the world. It's the most important thing in your life. Yeah, within almost no time, a bomb threat was called into that school. The school was evacuated. Children were moved to other facilities. They went all over the building because you don't just say, ah, it's probably a fake. You do not George W. Bush a bomb threat at a school and hand the report off to Brownie and go back to cut and brush after you read something that says, Bin Laden determined to strike inside the United States. You can't do that. And so the kids were traumatized. They had to go over every part of the school to make sure there was no bomb. So there's no bomb. So the kids go back to school in Highland Park. There's another bomb threat. And there's almost zero chance of catching the right-wing domestic terrorists who are doing this. It's not absolutely zero, but it is so close that it can feel zero's breath on its neck. So they went through the whole thing again. And I don't know yet. If the school reopens, will Chaya Ratchick encourage another bomb threat? How soon until we get from bomb threat to actual bomb no threat? I mean, the monster who shot up the school in Uvalde, Texas, was an alienated loner white boy with an AR-15. And apparently a history of abusing women online. what happens when it's a highly motivated maggot, homicidal bigot with something like, well, I don't know, bomb-making skills? So, you know, that is where, that's where this country is, and that's, and Allie was right in pointing out that this is where the maggots are headed. What they cannot get, as Mike Huckstervey said, what they cannot get at the ballot box, they will get via the bullet box. And as Matt in San Francisco was talking about trauma, there was an America once where some Americans, not all, but some, could pretty much walk freely, go freely about their business, about the country, about their daily lives, and not worry about somebody coming in with a semi-automatic, almost machine gun, and mowing down everybody in the grocery store. I said some people. Far from all. Women have to become situationally aware of where they are, what they're doing, and have for ages. People of color, the same. Brown, black, what have you. Because you never know when some white dude is going to go off. But now, we all have to be situationally aware. Because when the crazy, no, we're not going to say crazy, when the maladjusted homicidal maniac who was able to get an AR-15 and 1,000 rounds of ammunition more easily than he could have gotten a fishing license, yeah, breaks up with his girlfriend or gets rejected by somebody or takes the black pill because he's an incel and decides to start murdering people. Not always, but often the murdering is indiscriminate. Andy, the angry Jew. Highland Park, it's far from an average suburb in Chicago, very affluent, predominantly Jewish, and very liberal. So it will always be a target of these types in the Chicago area. I live 15 minutes from there and spent a lot of time in what's a beautiful area. The assassin from last 4th of July grew up there and knew full well who he was shooting at. That's right. That was Highland Park, too. So, a 4th of July... Second Amendment hero, and now Chaya Rat Chick, or what? That is not an old Protestant name, or an old Catholic name, for that matter. She's calling down bomb threats on a school in a Jewish community. Thanks for that, Andy. That background really, really helps. Maybe there was a reason the goddess of irony had me ask that question about what Yom Kippur meant for the former death camp capos who survived. Going back just a little bit, Matt in San Francisco, in regard to Nancy Pelosi and, you know, we need a strong Republican Party. Nancy needs to add sane to her wish list for the GOP. I could live with her saying we need a strong, sane GOP. I don't agree, but at least it's not as grating like nails on a chalkboard as her original saying. True, true, true. You know, add loyal to that, too, while we're at it, Matt. We need a loyal GOP. We need a GOP that... well, doesn't engage in domestic terrorist attacks trying to overturn the Constitution of the United States. You'd think that would be a sine qua non to being a viable political party in this country, but you would be wrong. This is turning out to be a heck of a Titanic Tuesday. We just crossed into the second hour of the program. Got $175 to go to meet Larry in Liberalville's challenge. If we do that every day this week, we finish the month for the first time since April, flush. Even. It's not like I'm going to be able to hire Annette's pool boy back. Pool man. Let's not be. Yeah, no. But it would be great. It really would be. And like I said early on, Matt was pretty much calling for some dialogue. If you would like to talk about these issues, you are absolutely welcome so to do. The phone lines are both open. Stress line, named for the irrepressible, unforgettable Bill Mr. Stress Miller. Well, the stress line is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And it's all first come, first served, and no call screening. So, that's that. And then if you want to reach out on Skype from anywhere on the planet, no calling plan necessary. It's Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn, K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Robin Kincaid Horn. And send me a contact request, and I'll approve it, and we'll get chatting. Thank you, Andy. Andy just jumped in on the fundraising and took us down to $150 to go on Larry's challenge. Thank you again, Larry. And thank you again, James. Thank you so much to everybody who has worked so hard to bring this program close to being able to do something we haven't done since April. And take a hell of a lot of stress off a certain hillbilly woman in West Virginia. Because I love the community you guys have created. And it means a lot that we can have these conversations every evening. Emilio, we need a GOP that's not like the GOP. Funny, because it's true. Who was the last decent Republican? Dwight Eisenhower. I put no hopes in nothing but scorn and contempt for the greedy old perverts. Pedophiles. Groomers! Yeah. Checking to see if we have the Green News Report this evening, and we do. Now, big news. And people have been asking me, yeah, what about the, did you see? Yes, I did. Outlets like, well, the New York Times noting that Judge Arthur Engoron has made an official finding of fact in the Attorney General's fraud trial against him, against Nitwit Nero. Judge Engoron found that, yes, Donald Trump did fraudulently inflate the value of his assets. This is a huge win for Attorney General Letitia James. As we discussed, the trial will begin on Monday. It is a civil trial. Again, he doesn't have to be there. But with this with this ruling, it narrows the issue to be tried itself. Judge Engoron found specifically that Trump and executives from his skeevy, dodgy little empire, and those executives included Nitwit Jr. and Eric the Dumber, but not Iwanka, routinely and repeatedly deceived banks, insurers, and others by massively overvaluing assets and exaggerating his net worth on paperwork. Writing in his opinion, Judge Engoron said, "The documents here clearly contain fraudulent valuations that defendants used in business." And in essence agreed with Letitia James that Trump would bait and switch. He would inflate his net worth up to $2.23 billion, maybe by one metric even $3.6 billion, on annual financial statements that he passed around to banks and insurers. And that includes places like Mar-a-Lago, his bed buggy pile of bricks in Florida, his tacky ass penthouse in Manhattan in Trump Tower, office buildings, golf courses, of course. Chris Keyes is pettifogging for Nitwit Nero both in New York and in Florida, and said, what's happening here is what happens every day in complex business transactions. But Judge Engoron said, "The fact that no one was hurt does not mean the case gets dismissed." And he granted today, this is big, Letitia James's team had asked for sanctions against Nitwit Nero's pettifoggers. And you really have to behave pretty egregiously to get a judge to agree to sanctions. I mean, that's a punishment. That is a clear penalty for basically violating the rules of the court. And what the pettifoggers consistently continued to do was to make arguments that Engoron had already held were not valid and had rejected. All five attorneys got fined $7,500 each. So Engoron will hear the case himself, beginning on the second day of October, and has profound implications. If the Attorney General wins, Julius Geezer, Nitwit Jr., and Eric the Dumber will all be banned from serving as officers of the of a corporation anywhere in New York. Six other issues remain after this issue was resolved by summary judgment. Which is a finding that there is no material there is no material issue of fact or law that remains to be decided. He's already been fined $110,000 for flaunting the case deadlines. And you know, he may not even have the money to pay it. He may be as poor as Job's turkey and brokered in the Ten Commandments. So that's, well, the ketchup must be flying. Probably at Bed Monster. I don't know, it might be cool enough to go back to Mogaloco and throw ketchup there. Now, don't get too excited. It's expected that the trial itself that Judge Ngoron is hearing could, and this sort of makes your eyes roll a bit, last into December. Remember, the trial of the Speedy Trial gang down in Fulton County begins 27 days from now. Going to be a lot of must-see. There's going to be some must-see TV this fall. So where else? Let's just go walk about through the stack here for a second. Oh, well, today was a... What did President Biden call it back when he was Obama's vice president and the Affordable Care Act became law? This is a big fucking deal. President Biden went and became the first president ever to walk a picket line today in Michigan. He even took the bullhorn and spoke to the striking auto workers.
Since 1973, but I tell you what, first time I've ever done it as a president. Okay. Oh, sure. One thing is real simple, I'm going to be very brief. The fact of the matter is that you guys, UAW, you saved the automobile industry back in 2008 and before. Made a lot of sacrifices, gave up a lot, and the companies were in trouble. But now they're doing incredibly well. And guess what? You should be doing incredibly well, too.
Yeah.
Stick with it, because you deserve the significant raise you need and other benefits.
Let's get it.
Let's get back who we lost, okay?
Yeah.
We say, damn, it's about time them to step up for us.
I like the fact that he refers to working people as us and we. I remember when Barack Obama said he'd put on his walking shoes and go walk the picket line. He never did. Joe Manchin put his money where his mouth was. Manchin, Jesus, Robin. Joe Biden put his money where his mouth was and put his walking shoes on and went and did the thing. Put on a UAW ball cap and everything with the logo. Now, CNN is referring, and I guess they can't help themselves, Biden versus Trump in battleground Michigan. Is this really going to be a battleground state? Anybody? Michigan friends? If you're listening live, I mean, you've got the Attorney General, the Secretary of State, the Governor. I guess the legislature's still maggoty. Is it that close? Now, the whole reason Nitwit Nero is going to Michigan tomorrow, he won't be walking any picket lines because he can't. Instead, he's going to go to a non-union plant. And the UAW has been clear that this is not support for the UAW strike. But he's going to Michigan because he wants to do, he has to do something to try to steal the limelight from the next Republican pageant. This one being held at the Ronald Reagan coloring book comic repository, or Reagan Library, I'm sorry. And you might find this hilarious. Seven candidates have qualified for the pageant at the Reagan Library. Oh, this is special. Two-term Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, a never-Trump, Republican, has not qualified. But the humor, and it's hilarious, the humor is in the qualification standards. This is what it takes to make it into a Trumpless Republican pageant. You have to have at least 3% support in two national polls. You got to get at least 3%. Or you can get 3% in one national poll and 3% in two polls from either Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, or South Carolina stand. I got my 3%. So lo and behold, yeah, there's seven of them. Will the for-profit media start referring to them as the seven dwarfs? Monkey Up will be there. Tim, no, I really do have a girlfriend. I promise I like girls. Scott will be there. Also from South Carolina stand, Nimrata Haley, who still can't find Bonomo on a map, but that's okay, Nimrata. It doesn't exist. Will be there to be the mean girl in attendance. The IT guy, Wee-Wake Ramaswamy. No whammy, no whammy, no whammy. Sorry, I'm still, that was funny, cat. We'll be there. Yeah, and you know, part of how he got rich, if I understand correctly, he was buddies with the pharma bro. Shkreli, remember it yet, right? And he's trying to be all butch and calling some of the other candidates super PAC puppets with ready-made prepared slogans. You know, for attacking him. Chris Christie will be the voice of, really, y'all, we can't nominate Trump. and the audience will probably spend the evening screaming at him. Doug Burgum, governor of North Dakotastan, will finally make it to the debate. He qualified. He got his 3%. You might recall he missed the first pageant because he came down hard on an ankle while playing pickup hoops with his campaign staff. No, he made it to the first pageant. He just had to... he said he stood on one leg behind the podium. He's got a little dodge going on. He's dipped into his personal fortune. He's a former software entrepreneur. And he's giving away $20 gift cards that he calls Biden relief cards for anybody who gives him $1. I have yet to figure out how that's actually legal, and I feel like it probably isn't. And then, rounding out the seven dwarves, Mike Pencilneck Geek, whose own boss wanted him to be hanged, and can't quite bring himself to fully condemn Daddy. And he'll be there to make sure that Pencilneck Geek will. He'll be there to make sure that the fetus fetish absolutists are absolutely represented. And, of course, the elephant in the room, and metaphorically and actually, it won't be in the room. Namely, Julius Geezer. Matt says, 7 3-percenters. The goddess of irony is working hard. She never mails it in, Matt. The Seven Dwarves ElectoralVote.com had the same idea as you. Since there are seven now, I expect lots of news stories about Donald Trump and the Seven Dwarves. There ain't no Snow White. Tim Scott, happy. Ron DeSantis, grumpy. Mike Pence, sleepy. Doug Burgum, bashful. Nikki Haley, doc. Chris Christie, sneezy. And Wewick Ramaswamy, dopey. That works. Although it'd be kind of fun to refer to Nimrata as, what, Bonomi? Oh, Bonomi. As to the picket line, something I heard someone say today I thought hit the nail on the head. This from Steve in New York. Biden doing this gave Sean Fain 3 to 5 minutes to tell Labor's position to the country. You can do a lot with 3 to 5 minutes. An awful lot. And I hope national attitudes toward this strike are good. Let's see. And we're coming up on the halfway mark of the program. I'm sorry. Someone is on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Robin.
Hey, Dave. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm fine.
Are you feeling a little better?
It's the grandson, huh?
Are you feeling a little better? You weren't so great last time. I don't mean your presentation. I mean, feeling. You weren't feeling so wonderful.
Well, I wasn't feeling so well, and a couple of days later, I ended up in the emergency room.
Oh, no. What?
Food poisoning and a bladder infection. Sorry about not giving the alert for...
Oh, no, no, no. That's okay. Gee, oh, my God. That's horrible. Are you on the mend?
Well, yes. No thanks to CVS. They gave me a script for medication. We dropped it off on Saturday, and they're still not ready.
What, is old man Gower pounding it out with his mortar and pestle in the back room?
Well, I don't know, but they say there are a couple people short. I called Woodsocket, Rhode Island, where their headquarters is, and I filed a complaint. They're supposed to get a hold of me tomorrow. I've been assured. And believe me, I'm going to light a fire in the ear of whoever talks to me. But when are we going to admit, one, we have a Nazi problem in this country, and two, that the Republican Party is nothing but a clown show?
A Nazi clown show?
Well, people didn't take Hitler seriously because of his mustache. There was one group that you left out that the Nazis targeted, that they practiced on, the disabled.
Absolutely, yes.
They started their final solution, getting rid of people they felt were a drain on the resources of the country. And I've heard that same kind of bullshit talk from Republicans for decades, going back to Ronnie Reagan. I think Biden, I'm the grandson of a UAW worker and a stepson of a UAW worker, and I hope that God, Biden is continues being so vocally supportive of the unions, because by God, Robin, it needs to happen. It's way past time.
I was about to say that very thing. It's needed to happen for a long damn time. This above, there is no such thing as above the fray anymore.
The thing is, when you have a healthy union, you have healthy unions in this country, you've got a healthy tax base. Your local, your state, your federal taxes get collected. Things get paid for. Things get done. You've got skilled people who can do them. But no, the Republicans are like, well, my money's making money, and it's making money, and it's making money, and that's all that matters. No, it's not. I mean, granted, Haley is still looking for Bonomo. I heard from the vice president of Bonomo.
Did you?
He was underwater at the time, so it was a little garbled, but the translation was that we don't exist. So, you know.
Did you say the translation was gargled?
Yes.
Well played.
But he said we don't exist. And so I think somebody needs to tell Nikki this. Because I like to refer to them not as Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, but the traffic cone and the seven speed bumps.
Well, we just had a suggestion from Steve in New York, and I'm fond of it, hence the cowbell. Snowflake and the Seven Dwarves. Ooh, that's quality.
I'll give it to Steve. Try his phone. But, no, it just... Nobody can say, well, this is just a disaffected party that they've been taught. They've been taught, well, there's nothing you can do unless we do it for you. All the things the Republicans used to say they were against, they're now for Russia. You know, they're not. You know, I agree with you. The last decent Republican was Eisenhower, and even he had his problems. Operation Wetback. Where even U.S. citizens were transported to Mexico.
Yep, you're right.
I think if you're really going to look for a decent Republican, you'd have to go all the way back to Ulysses Grant.
Abraham Lincoln.
Well, I say Grant because
he's more
Grant
recent.
Was willing to take on the Klan.
Grant did that. Okay, hold on though. Who got shot and lingered miserably until his death and was succeeded by Chester A. Arthur?
Oh, that would have been Garfield.
Yes. It may be Garfield.
I think it was Garfield.
The last good Republican president may have been Garfield, because one of the things that he was actually committed to doing was finishing Reconstruction and completing the work that Lincoln got started.
Johnson should have been...
Because Garfield was shot, and you know the story of Garfield's demise is just a horror. Garfield was not killed by the bullet. Garfield was killed by his doctors.
By their dirty hands and the infections they gave him. Yeah.
Yeah, and the forced. God, here we go. This one's on me. The forced rectal feedings. Here's some mashed potatoes and gravy, Mr. President.
And the thing is, Marvin, there was an X-ray machine nearby, but nobody thought to use it.
I recall that, yeah.
It was a brand new invention, and I'm not criticizing the medical people for not using it, because it was a brand new invention. Most doctors wouldn't have known what it was for. But the irony is there was a nearby X-ray machine where they could have found out exactly where the bullet was.
I'll be darned. A little bit of a backgrounder here coming in from Matt in San Francisco. Since I was talking about Wewick Ramaswamy being a tech bro, Matt says, Wewick Rosanna Dana. Wewick Rosanna Dana bought a failed Alzheimer's drug from a pharma company for $5 million. Then had his mother, who's a doctor in that field, massage the studies enough to make the case that the drug had great promise. Then went out and sold that narrative to investors to the tune of $1 billion. Then, on the third trial, it was discovered the drug didn't work. All the investors lost their money, and he walked away with close to $1 billion. How he's not in jail for fraud is beyond me. However, Republicans seem to like Conman. But I've got one here. This just landed. Nitwit Nero very nearly Hunter Biden'd himself. Yes, to Hunter Biden is now a verb. Now
he did. Well, how did he do that?
Well, he was working the crowds in South Carolina, Stan, and he went to a gun store because, you know, of course.
Oh, and he tried to buy a firearm.
Well, one,
and it's illegal for somebody felony indictment.
Well, one, he's not from South Carolina, Stan, so he can't buy a gun in South Carolina, Stan. But two, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms forbids purchases of firearms by people who are under felony indictment. Ah!
Well, you know, that only makes sense.
But this is the gang that can't shoot straight, pun intended. And so his spokes creep, Steve Chung, shitted, you know, over on Shitter, that today President Trump bought a gun. And then somebody pointed out that that's illegal and could get him indicted again. And another spokes creep said, No, he didn't. He definitely did not buy a gun. And the funniest part, well, one of the funniest parts is apparently he was enamored of a Glock pistol.
I'd like to have one of those.
Now, if you know anything about pistols, Glocks, they call it a safety. It's not a safety. Glocks don't have physical safeties. You know, the little click up, click down. There's a red dot and a white dot. If it's white dot, it's not hot.
Right.
If it's red, it's ready to go. A Glock doesn't have one of those. It's got like a trigger within a trigger. A little micro trigger on the upper end that slides into the main trigger and then makes it possible to pull the main trigger and fire the weapon. He would blow his foot off. And then there's the fact that Glocks, well, the Glock 43 is not particularly huge, but any other Glock, he couldn't get his tiny hands around it.
Well, he needs something. You know what? They have a lot of very small pistols built for the little ladies, you know, with pink handles and the little and smaller frames. He might be more interested in something like that.
Well, that would be like the Ladysmith 38 Special.
Right.
But that's a wheel. That's a wheel gun. Are you really going? You really going to trust Nitwit Nero with a five shot wheel gun?
I wouldn't trust Nitwit Nero with a used sanitary pad.
Well, you went there, didn't you? But I was looking for more.
Yes,
like
I
wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't trust Nitwit Nero with a cap pistol.
But I heard about this, and the next time one of his maggoty supporters ends up mentioning Hunter Biden, I'm going to go, what about Donald Trump trying to buy a firearm and, you know, while he's under indictment? We didn't do that. No, because they stopped it. Can you imagine if they'd run it and come back where they would have had to, if he showed his ass, and the Secret Service would be like, sure, we need to go. And they will not be too gentle with him. One thing I admire about the Secret Service, during his first run, a balloon popped at some rally, and they bum rushed him under the podium faster than the guys at the 500 in May. And he got all upset with them. And I'm looking at him, looking at the television screen going, they're doing their job. I why they would let him go into a store with a bunch of gunned up dipshits is beyond me.
Wow, that really should be the name of a punk band, the Gunned Up Dipshits. But okay, so there's another aspect to this story though, Dave, that's really quite fascinating. And it's an inquiry worthy of somebody in the multimillionaire for-profit media making. Namely, you have to fill out a form in order to purchase a firearm. And that form, contains a declaration that the purchaser is not under the influence of nor addicted to illegal drugs or alcohol. That's what got Hunter Biden in hot water. That and being named Hunter Biden. But yeah. The other part of it is, the purchaser also has to certify that they are not under felony indictment for a crime that the conviction of which could yield a term of imprisonment greater than 1 year. Tangerine Tiberius is under 91 of those. Not one, 91.
And I believe the collective number of years advances over 6 centuries.
Yeah, if it was all done consecutively. So here's the thing, though. When you fill out, because the most important thing in the world in purchasing a pistol is to be able to purchase it and go toddling out the door with it the day you buy it. And so the FBI and the ATF have a computer system online, Dave. And the FBI NCIS maintains a database of people who are convicted of felonies or charged with felonies, domestic violence, that sort of thing, so that when an application goes through, they can search it right away. Here's what we don't know, and here's what the NCIS needs to answer. Has Clementine Caligula been entered into the NCIS database as having been charged with 91 felonies that are punishable by more than a year in prison? If his name has not been entered therein, why the hell not?
He's just like any other U.S. citizen. Supposedly.
Yeah.
I think it's the FBI's responsibility to do that. You might have more than a few maggots holding it back. And that would make an interesting investigation.
Well, it's a fairly straightforward question. Has his name been entered into the NCIS database?
And if so,
he has been charged with longer than, and generally speaking, felonies. One of the common attributes of a felony is that a felony is punishable by more than 1 year. Like in West Virginia.
Yeah, that's one of the distinguishing marks between that and that's the difference between a misdemeanor and a felony.
Right.
Sorry, I had a bit of brain fart right there.
No, that's okay. That's but you're exactly right. so there is, there's no reason he should not have been entered into the database. He has been charged. He has been charged federally with felonies in New York. He's been charged federally with felonies in Florida. He's been charged federally with felonies in D.C. And he's been charged on a state level with felonies in Georgia. And who knows, but what, there may be more coming. Oh, Lee in New York says, Nitwit Nero and a gun. Lee in New York says, I wouldn't trust him with a super soaker. There you go. That's it. Yeah. There. Yes.
Well, he would be against super soakers because it might get his makeup all messed.
Or his hair wet.
Yeah, he evidently, when he was down at Bug Monster or something, one of his housekeepers was in charge of cleaning his shirt, and he complained that there was this orange ring around the collar, and this woman was an undocumented worker, and he threatened to fire her, and she looked at him and said, well, if you didn't wear as much makeup, it wouldn't happen. This guy, I remember him in the 80s when he used to wear the duck bill. He'd slick back his hair, and then for a while, all the dude bros were wearing that duck bill style. And I'm thinking, he was a joke then, and he's a joke now.
Yeah, wasn't that called? Yeah, that was actually, I think that was actually called a DA, a duck's ass.
But, and it had as much oil as a duck's ass, too. That was a thing. You couldn't have a hair move under any circumstances. Hurricane force winds could slam you in the side of the head. That dew was not to move.
Well, that's like the good Pentecostal ladies who come out of the hair salon with their hair, because their hair hangs to their ankles, and they come out of the salon with, and the phrase for this, with their hair done up to Jesus. That's basically Marge Simpson's hairstyle.
Yeah,
you can see it. If you want to see it in real life, just go and go on YouTube and look up some Happy Goodman Family videos.
I kind of embarrassed for Pentecostal women in the Shoney's one day. One morning, all four of them were around the table holding hands, saying prayers. And I looked over at Christine and I said, honey, I feel like the odd man out. Christine said, why? I said, you didn't tell me the Pentecostal lesbian prayer breakfast is here today.
Oh!
And those ladies undid their hands so quick, you would have thought lightning. And then Christine goes into the bathroom, and this woman is picking her teeth with a flossing stick. I'm like, Christine looked at her and said, can't you do that at home? But, yeah, they moved those hands so fast, evidently they didn't want Jesus to hear me, so... fortunately they didn't say anything to me, but I feel a little twinge of giggles every time I remember that. I mean, let's face it, Robin. there's something about a religious movement where they're worried more about somebody else's bedroom habits than they are about old Matthew 25, for example.
Yeah, Matthew who?
Each of the people, huh?
Matthew who? Matthew 25.
Matthew 25.
No, I know. I'm being a smartass.
Yeah, yes, you are. Matt who? Not Matt in San Francisco. But, no. Although, if they're quoting Matt in San Francisco, I doubt they know it. But I heard last week, when you put on one of the older programs, I heard your first conversation with Reggie in Decatur. And I was amazed at how well he knew his right-wing douchebags.
Oh, Reggie does. Reggie does.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that man was on it. And I kept thinking to myself, I said, that's the first conversation that Robin had with Reggie, but thankfully it wasn't the last.
No.
You know, so Reggie, that made my, thank you for calling that way back when. Now, as far as the pageant is concerned, Nitwit Nero taking the advice of at least one of his lawyers by not going to the debate. After all, he's already been warned he has the right to remain silent. We know he doesn't have the ability or just stay in a way to avoid any problems. Because there are prosecutors and jurisdictions who will be watching that thing with bated breath if he shows up. They'll have it on record and everything else. I say Donnie's dodging them.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good point because, you know, anytime that he actually does something rational, it's the functional equivalent of hiding the broccoli behind the chocolate pudding. Wow, that probably ruined somebody's dinner in the Central Daylight Time Zone. I had a friend like that. When he was little bitty, he would not eat his vegetables, so his mother would put the broccoli on the back of the spoon, the chocolate pudding on the front of the spoon, he'd see the chocolate pudding, eat the chocolate pudding, and broccoli. And the way you get Nitwit Nero not to screw himself is to tell him, boss, you don't need to be there. They're a bunch of nobodies. You go to a gun store in South Carolina instead. You know, you go to a non-union auto factory in Michigan instead. Speaking of which, the video of the gun store, Arnold and PA said that video was gold. I about lost my mind. It was amazing. And sadly, the video has been taken down because it could trigger another federal investigation.
Yeah, but we both know, Robin, nothing on the internet ever does.
Well, and you know, there it highlights the ongoing problem of straw purchasers, where a person will purchase a firearm in their name on behalf of someone who can't. So there's really no way of knowing if they walked out of there with that Glock. And the video was just lunacy because he said,
Glock, is that a good gun?
Oh, yes, sir. It's a very good gun.
They say Glock is a good gun. I've heard you. Frederick Douglass told me Glock is a good gun.
You know, every time you play this little toady voice, it sounds like Smithers.
Oh, that one? Yes. It kind of is Smithers. Yes, sir.
Release the hounds.
And frankly, my nitwit Nero is a dumber Mr. Burns.
With a head cold.
Well, he's plugged up from the Adderall, if you want to get right down to it.
Ron Jackson, Candyman, reports to the former president.
Oh, and we are coming up on the beginning of the third hour, end of the second hour, beginning of the third hour. I've got a wagering question. What are the odds? Because this is Tuesday. This was Congress's first day back. This was the Maggot House's first opportunity to waste more time not solving the shutdown.
And getting paid for it.
And getting paid for it. What are we like in terms of odds that Kevin McCarthy will actually adjourn the House again? The shutdown would start on Sunday and not even try to work on Saturday. Screw it. Young, I'll go home.
I give it a 2-1 because if he brings him in on Saturday to work, there are going to be those individuals with deeply held religious beliefs, especially those in the barbecue belt, who would immediately call for the end of his speakership.
The barbecue belt? I like that. The barbecue belt behind the corn pone curtain.
It's amazing how many belts they have down south.
Belts, curtains, you know.
You got your Bible. You got your gun.
You got your
barbecue.
You got your tornado.
Well, that's more Midwest.
Oh no, it isn't. Oh no, we'll fight over that. The Bible Belt and Tornado Alley are basically the same street with different names. And Jesus always blows over a church.
Yeah, you ever notice that?
Oh, not only do I notice, I remember when my dear friend Malloy started a bit of a firestorm. This was years ago now. A church had just been blown to toothpicks. And Malloy asked, Jesus is in charge of all of this. Why is he always blowing away his own worshipers' houses of worship? Maybe they should ask. Something along those lines. And there was an absolute shitstorm. But Malloy wasn't wrong.
Was this when he was on terrestrial radio?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if I really want to get my blood pressure up, I tune in the line.
Well, you know, there's that old saying, and no judgment here, but there's that old question, what do a southern divorce and a tornado have in common?
I don't know. What do a southern divorce and a tornado have in common?
Somebody's going to lose a trailer. That's awful. I mean, it really, really is. I mean, the night that we spent on the phone with Ferg as a tornado cell passed overhead, and it's like, oh, I was freaking out bad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's no joke. Every time they tell me it's high winds around here, I get worried about Christine. But since she can't really leave her trailer, she does her best. She's got one of her bathrooms prepared. She's got blankets and pillows and things that she can put over herself in the bathtub. It's not much protection, she says, but it's something.
Yeah. At least slow down the flying glass. By the way, Reverbo asks, below the barbecue belt, is that anything like the possum line? I think they may be contiguous.
I think so, but don't besmirch possums.
Oh, no. We love possums. You got possums. There's so many problems you don't have. Ticks.
There are so many roach nests in Indianapolis that a lot, most of them are underground. And you mow the lawns around here, suddenly the birds will come down. And especially around older houses, two or three roaches on the end of a beak. And you know, people will complain, well, you're not doing enough to control the roaches. Well, if the whole neighborhood has roach nests underground, there's nothing you're going to do to stop it. That they've been here for billions of years, longer than we have.
They'll be here long after.
That's right. And I do not know if 6-foot sentient cockroaches would worship us as deities, but then that would be getting into an insectoid mind, and well. That's a little difficult.
Well, we've all seen the first Men in Black.
You ever pull the wings off a fly? You ever see the fly get even?
Well, Dave, I'm sorry you're going through what you're going through, and I hope CVS does get you taken care of, like yesterday.
I hope that. Everything goes well, and I hope you make your goal for this evening.
Thank you. I hope so, too. We're $150 away.
I will let Christine know that you're doing well.
Thank you. Do please.
And she'll be glad, because she'll be like, well, did you talk to Robin last night? That's your usual ask. I told her I can tell her yes. Now, so take care of yourself.
I will, and you do the same.
Thanks, Robin. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, Dave. You take care now.
Bye.
Bye. Our buddy Dave in the Blind. Taliban, Indianapolis. So we are into the third hour of the program. We've got $150 to go on Larry and Liberal Hill's challenge. That's tremendous if we can meet that. We do that every night this week. It all gets doubled. 200 becomes, you know, this is a doubling challenge. $150 turns into $300, basically the 200 turns into $400 every night. And we finish September fully funded, which is just amazing. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, Larry. And thanks again to James, who filled in the hole so that we're just dealing with this challenge this week. Thank you so, so much. Well, how about that? Talking about Nitwit Nero buying the gun. Darlene in Connecticut said, marginal trailer queen and her loser boyfriend were pretty adamant and tickled pink that Trump bought that Glock. She said she had video, too. Tickled pink. Until they weren't. Sporkfoot strikes again. And, possum line. Reverbo. Flavio pointing something out based on yesterday's conversation about the people shrieking about President Biden. James Carville, too? It too, James? James Carville quoted as saying, regarding the renomination of Joe Biden, the voters don't want this, and that's in poll after poll after poll. You can't look at what you look at and not feel some apprehension here. Oh, old snakehead. That's what his wife calls him, old snakehead. He said that, and the good thing is, Flavio points out, Ari Melber had Josh Marshall Talking Points memo on, who gave Carville some pushback. He asked, so what's your strategy, Jim? What do you propose? He also pointed out none of the putative candidates, Newsom, Pritzker, Whitmer, have any national prominence. So, God, we've got a few months to sort this out. I don't think it needs any sorting. We got a president who's kicking ass. The media needs to do some serious navel gazing and ask themselves why they are not giving him credit, because by God, if this had been happening under Nitwit Nero, well, it's like that old quote from Dorothy Parker. I love to drink martinis. Two at the very most. Three and I'm under the table. Four and I'm under the host. They'd be under the table, the for-profit media would be, if this was going on under Nitwit Nero. And we have four years of evidence to prove it. Empirically derived evidence, the best kind. And I misspoke. I said this shutdown would start Sunday. No. I guess he will send them home. According to CNN's story, the shutdown happens at midnight on Friday. Now, let's understand, all the squeaker of the mouse has to do, Craven McCarthy, hi Sylvie, is have a chat with Hakeem Jeffries, find five or six of his own members who would like to be reelected in districts they come from that went for Biden in 2020, and say, we're going to put a clean continuing resolution out there, and we're going to vote on it. And it'll go to the Senate, and boom, done. So when Manu Raju asked him about all that, are you ruling out a clean CR without any border security? Oh, Manu Raju, stop that. Stop using their framing. Well, Kevers said, you know what's so concerning here? What do you tell to the families that tomorrow morning are going to wake up and their child's dead because fentanyl came across? I don't know. Kev, you've been pretty good at not saying things to families who wake up the next morning after their children have been chopped into chutney by semi-automatic weapons fire in schools. You seem to have that one down pat with your tots and pears. What do you tell that border agent that you saw the other day? Now his network doesn't believe it, but he's all in blood. Or the cartels, the billions of dollars that they're making, or to the young girls that get raped. Well, I know, Kevers, I know what you tell the young girls who get raped. You're sure as shit not getting an abortion, girl. You may be 11, but you're gonna be a mama. You'll be a grandmother sooner than Lauren Boebert. God, these people. They're so not good at this. And then, you know, of course, and again, it's all Joe Biden's fault. So another reporter said, okay, if we're asking what we're going to tell people, what do you tell the workers who are concerned they're going to get furloughed next week because there's no agreement in your chamber? Well, I know. It's easy. All the president has to do is say, you know what, as one of my fundamental jobs as the president of the United States is to secure our border. Honest to God, if Joe Biden sent an entire brigade of Marines with M60 machine guns down there and opened up on innocent, unarmed, desperate migrants, the Republican Party would shut the government down because he didn't use a fucking suitcase nuke. God, I hate him. One more reporter said, Speaker McCarthy, if we see the rule votes fail later today, is it possible to even move on to a continuing resolution for you? Oh, yeah, I'll never give up. And the reporter said, well, I know that, but do you think you have the votes? Well, I got a lot of things I can try. Sure you do. And so, more reporting from Manu Raju. He said that when McCarthy was asked, do you have the votes to keep the government open? And he said, oh, what's concerning to me is that there are people in the Republican Party who will take the position of President Biden against what the rest of Americans want. What rest of Americans? This is a minority position. Is he just saying that the dead-ender, hard-case losers the huddled masses yearning to eat Cheetos are going to be the minority that rules this country? And they kept pressing him, and he got nastier and nastier. Of course, it's probably a pretty shitty thing to be, speak the weaker squeaker right now. And they kept asking him, well, you know, you've got some Republicans who said they'll vote with Democrats on a bill to keep the government from shutting down. Speaker McCarthy, if he asked if he was could survive a vote to oust him from the speakership, as Matt, it just gates worse, has threatened, said, well, I don't count that vote. Well, that's the clerk of the House, I guess. And all this business about fentanyl crossing the border is just bullshit. Pure, unmitigated, fly-blown bullshit. About 90% of the fentanyl that enters the United States illegally, because we do use it legally in hospitals and things like surgery, around 90% of it comes in through U.S. ports of entry. That's where it gets seized. And they're the ones who, the American citizens who cross the border legally, who purchase it, say, at a pharmacy in Mexico. A number approaching zero fentanyl has been seized from migrants trying to make asylum claims. According to the editorial board at the Washington Post, the U.S. government will almost certainly shut down on October 1st the work of ultra-conservative holdouts who want to burn the whole place down, as McCarthy put it. Yet for now, McCarthy does not appear willing to take away the matches. He could sideline the objectors by calling House Democrats and agreeing to pass bipartisan legislation to fund the government. Yeah, he could. But that's why he's the man with the spine of silly putty. That's why he's the squeaker of the mouse. That's why he's the weaker speaker. Matt, it just gets worse, is apparently the real power running the House of Representatives right now. And then there's Matt, it just gets worse. Holy crap. Now the thing that's going around, the hot button issue of the day, is something that happened, and you know, this is an ooh gross moment. In her interview with Rachel Maddow, Cassidy Hutchinson said that skeevy-ass Representative Forehead Gates was constantly hitting on her. And she said, I never dated Matt Gaetz. I have much higher standards in men. Apparently, Matt Gaetz is just a total gross perv. Because remember, he is also alleged to have bedded Representative Ana Pavlaguna. I don't know if it was aboard the Flossed Paradise or not. And she, that's the funny thing, no woman wants to admit having had sex with Matt Gaetz. And I can understand that. No decent guy would ever want to be with her. And that's not me judging. I mean, ew. This is a guy who paid an underage sex worker, you know, for sex. When the shutdown begins, Flavio says, in the absence, quoting from NBC News, in the absence of last-minute action from Congress, the shutdown will start at 12:01 a.m. on Sunday, October 1st. It is difficult to predict how long a shutdown could last, given divisions on Capitol Hill. Republicans have a narrow majority in the House, and the Senate is controlled by Democrats. The Senate would pass it in a second. If it's clean. And I don't know how this is a winning strategy for the maggots. They have to be reading their own press or something. And speaking of reading their own press, yeah, so that clip comes out and lo and behold, the man who looks like rancid hot dog water smells, Stevie Three Shirts, jumps right on it.
I will say on behalf of myself, I never dated Matt Gaetz. I have much higher standards in men and met Matt.
I will say on behalf of myself, I'm kind of gobsmacked here.
Yeah, well, you look it. You look like you've been smacked by a gob of something.
Dating Cassidy Hutchinson, but Congressman Gaetz. I love that line, maybe the best line of the year. You're a national treasure. I don't think, Cassidy, you're going to have some backup for that. You're going to have some backup for that. But here's what's going on.
Wait, yeah, because Steve Bannon knows what's going on. Oh, he does, he does. Wait, did he shave? Maybe he thinks he had... No, don't even say that, Robin. Shame on you. This is all about silencing Matt Gaetz. Because Matt Gaetz is a man of action and greatness.
No need to try to be funny about this, because it's quite serious. This is all... There are no coincidences in this town. This is all dropped right now. Because Matt Gaetz is the leader of this, trying to save the country by going through an appropriations process.
Wait, wait. we're going to try to save the country by shutting down the government, furloughing workers, making people work without pay, making people get behind on their bills. You know, they don't get paid with interest.
Actually start to have massive cuts, as Morning Mika tells you. And what they want today, they don't want Matt Gaetz going to these gaggles and being able to talk about the business of the nation. In the gaggle, all the questions are going to be for the next 3 or 4 days about Cassidy Hutchinson.
Okay. Matt Gaetz, all Matt Gaetz ever, you know, it's never the perv's fault. It's never the dude's fault. All he had to do was not bring his gross paws around here. Hey, baby, what do you want to go for a drink? My daddy's rich. All he has to do is not do that, and bang, no problem. And here we are. And speaking of criticizing women, this is Titanic Tuesday. And this is Titanic AF. Oh, by the way, the shutdown, Stephen, New York says the only way it won't last at least a month is if McCarthy agrees to sacrifice his speakership. He won't. Well, he won't. It's the one thing in life, it's the only thing in life he's ever wanted. Power. And now he has it and can't use it. Because it's not real power, because his testicles are in an old peanut butter jar in the back of Marginal Trailer Queen's refrigerator. Now, I'm going back to the NCIS database. Mark in Florida. Thank you for the little emoji with my name. Hey, Mark. It's a pair of red high-heel pumps. I'm not sure if indictments get listed with NCIS, but I bet Trump has conviction of domestic abuse somewhere that a confidentiality agreement didn't stop. Well, NCIC, I don't know. I'm getting lost in the alphabet here. That database is of everyone, it's supposed to be, everyone who is charged with a felony is supposed to be listed, because that's one of the things that prevents the purchase of a firearm. And because you have to swear under penalty of perjury that you have not been charged with a felony punishable by more than a year in jail, prison. So if it's not in the database somewhere, Mark, it's going to be kind of hard to verify on the form, because that form then goes through the, you know, it's all computerized now. They hit the send button. They've got your ID and everything, and boom, it's all yours. At least, you know, hopefully. So we've got a new question to ponder. Is Nitwit Nero carrying hot? Do you think, with a Glock, and a brand new firearm, by the way, is this? You got to work with them. The slide, I'm sure Mark in Florida knows this. Brand new firearm, the slide is not easy. You have to hold the pistol by the grip with your finger nowhere near the trigger, and pull the slide with your other hand back to chamber around. Is there anybody here who actually thinks that Marcus Aurelius could do that? Really, do you think we need an investigation? I want to know if he's in violation of another federal statute. Maybe he could hire the same lawyer that's representing Hunter Biden. on the same charge. God almighty, y'all. You're right, Matt, in San Francisco. The goddess is working. Because that would be peak goddess of irony stuff. Nitwit Nero charged with the very same charge that the maggots howled and barked and screamed for Hunter Biden to be charged with. And then somebody else could catch charges if they straw purchased it for him. Like maybe Ralph Norman of South Carolina. Was he there? I mean, I know a little bit about Glocks. I remember when it was the early to mid 90s when the West Virginia State Police stopped carrying those badass walnut handled long barreled 357 mags and started carrying, and this happened all over the country. New York, the NYPD started carrying Glocks, and there was early on there was a rash of. It's not funny, but there was a rash of cops who are taught to handle firearms who carry hot in the pipe, reaching for their sidearm, pulling it out and shooting themselves in the leg or otherwise discharging the firearm on the way up. Or stories about guys who tuck a pistol with one hot in the pipe into the waistband of their pants, and well, it wind up one nut wonders. Sorry, I'm not trying to be gross. This is just how it is. But anyway, it being Titanic Tuesday and all. Let's check in with the check in with the right-wing outrage machine. It is no coincidence. Remember, Steve Bannon says there are no coincidences. Well, this is one of those. So I've mentioned a couple of times yesterday and today a really good op-ed piece by Will Bunch suggesting that there need to be Woodstock-sized, huge... I hate this chair sitting against this. It drives me crazy. It squeaks. I have a pair of squeaky tennis shoes. Hate those, too. Squeaky shoes are the worst. But a series of national mega massive concerts urging, you know, the Gen Z and Gen A, to the extent that they're voting age yet, to get the hell out and vote Democrat. Because that's where the influence power lies with that potentially crushing voting bloc. And Will Bunch specifically mentioned Taylor Swift. In particular, Taylor Swift has been urging the Swifties to get out and vote. In Will Bunch's column, he said, it's a dire situation. Too many might stay at home on the night of November 3rd, 2024 and wake up on the road to fascism. What a mess. Who can save us? I'm thinking Taylor Swift. Back on National Voter Registration Day, Taylor Swift posted a plea to her 272 million Instagram followers to sign up to vote. And that's when Will Bunch said the Swift maneuver, see what he did there, was very much in line with something I've been thinking about lately. America needs something a lot bigger than our corrupted political parties if we're going to stop this slide into authoritarianism. I've said in the past that the Trump personality cult has turned the GOP into an anti-democratic movement, not a political party. I now believe that defeating this MAGA cult will require not just a counter-movement, but a mass movement that saves our politics by transcending politics, led by the best and brightest of pop culture and moral virtue. He went on to say, we need a democracy league. My hope is that a pro-democracy mass movement could offer a reality-based slap in the face to an electorate that needs to understand the real choices here before it's too late. Please get the Democracy League cranked up, preferably today. Start planning the Woodstock-sized concerts and start filming the celebrity-laden TV ads that'll get not thousands but millions of young people to register over the next 12 months. That's the backstory. Enter, among other people, God, this is dumb. From the Federalist, no, I'm not kidding. The Federalist, and some guy who perceives himself as pundit. Roger Kimball. Roger Kimball declared, well, first I'll start with Sean Davis, CEO and co-founder of The Federalist, followed by 392,000 people as opposed to the 272 million of Taylor Swift. They're real thinky over at The Federalist. Think pieces, y'all. And so they published an article. No, really. Taylor Swift's popularity is a sign of societal decline. Now, please, don't give up on me here, because this is not the pop culture portion of the program. I'm going to have to do that voice.
Audiences and elite tastemakers alike have decided Taylor Swift's narcissistic lyrics and cliched music are a cultural triumph. But why would we celebrate this?
And the article goes on.
The New Yorker issued a high-toned blessing by publishing a remarkable essay. Listening to Taylor Swift in prison, her music makes me feel that I'm still part of the world I left behind.
And this guy, these people are pathetic.
There was a time when we imagined that everyone in the prison yard would stand around overwhelmed by the sheer emotion and elevation of the soul produced by hearing Solaria from Mozart's Le Nozze di Figaro, even though they had no idea what those two Italian ladies were singing about. But if blank space is what you've got on the cheap commissary radio to help you count the days, I'm not going to begrudge you.
Maybe Nitwit Nero can listen to Mozart in prison. So, Mark Hemingway wrote that bilious piece. Sean Davis, the co-founder and CEO of The Federalist, said,
Taylor Swift is dumb and her music sucks.
Another guy named Roger Kimball from New Criterion and a columnist at Encounter Books, whatever, then declared, and I trust we're not also out of touch, that we don't know what Taylor Swift looks like. She is breathtakingly beautiful. Also, said Roger Kimball, she is homely. The guy who ran for office up in Wisconsin and gathered some notoriety, known as Iron Stash, he's an iron worker, Randy Bryce, answered Roger Kimball and said, well, that's one way to get attention, but I don't think you have to worry about her writing a song about you. Because that's one of the running gags, is that every time, and I think it was a couple of Fridays back, Ben, who loves his Kansas City Chiefs, pointed out the fact that Taylor has been romantically affiliated with a player for the Chiefs. I don't follow her that closely, but then I began to say, so, this makes my head hurt. I think I said a couple of weeks ago on the front porch, I don't think she'll write a song about him. Well, there's Randy Bryce saying to Roger Kimball, well, that's one way to get attention. I don't think you have to worry about her writing a song about you. Homely. Now, this is a guy with a round face and round glasses, and his hairline has receded to the point that what may have been a head of hair once is, well, it's singing with the bleeding choir eternal. But no, really. And let an attractive woman speak up. Maybe this is that old philosophical argument. If a beautiful woman speaks in a forest, will there immediately crop up a bunch of right-wing dude bros to criticize her, call her ugly, and say, oh, you know, I wouldn't. So, yeah, the Kansas City Chiefs guy is Travis Kelce. She even showed up at the Kansas City game in one of the skyboxes. And this caused a complete hysteria. On the same weekend that ESP, in fact, it was a hilarious meme. Was that you, Joy, in Ann Arbor? You know, the meme of the guy in the shirt looking back over his shoulder at the woman walking away from him as the woman he's walking with starts looking at him? Well, they replaced that whole meme with the guy looking back over his shoulder at Taylor Swift at the same time that the woman who's with him has been replaced by Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders, now the coach of the University of Colorado Buffaloes, and in a much-hyped contest on Saturday evening, Coach Primetime got him and his theretofore unbeaten Buffaloes ass-handed to them by the Oregon Ducks. And, oh, this is such a big deal. Oh, Primetime's good. Yeah. 42-6. It was a beatdown. Oregon's coach told his team, they're playing for clicks, we're playing for wins. And then the Ducks went out and proved it. What's his name? Nix, the Auburn transfer to Oregon. God, he looked like a Heisman winner. Colorado mostly made him look like that. But all of a sudden, all the energy, all the oxygen left the room over Primetime getting his ass handed to him and shifted over to, oh my God, Tay-Tay is in Kansas City watching the game. Well, the Maggots are an easily triggered lot. And now that Taylor is asking her Swifties to to get out there and register to vote and maybe even save democracy. The minute she shows up on TV, suddenly Sean Davis publishes Taylor Swift is dumb and her music sucks. And then the article from Mark Hemingway saying that the popularity of Taylor Swift is a sign of national decline. Her music is utterly defined by self-obsession rather than introspection. And then there was again Roger Kimball, who is not going to get a song written about him. I wouldn't be so sure. She claps back pretty hard at people who mess with her. Then there's maggot Juanita Broderick. Remember Juanita Broderick? Yeah, she way back in the dim, dark, and misty era of the Clinton presidency, Juanita Broderick said Bill Clinton raped her. Which is ironic as hell, in that she is now a maggot, and assuming the evidence in the light most favorable to Juanita Broderick that Bill Clinton did that, she's still a massive supporter of a guy who has been found in court to be a rapist. Juanita Broderick said, who gives a F what Taylor Swift thinks? And then there's another dude, Clay Travis.
Yeah, Clay Travis.
God, you can almost hear the tobacco spit in his cheek just saying his name.
Clay and Book Radio, author, American Playbook, coming August 8th, dad of three boys, Bowyer.
Wow, Clay Travis is mad at Travis Kelce.
Travis Kelce's doing Bud Light and COVID shot commercials. He needs to fire all his marketing agents, or he needs to just go ahead and cut his dick off, become a chick, and endorse Joe Biden.
I guess this is the point where I gladly endorse Joe Biden. Parker Malloy responded to, can you go like one day without referencing trans people? Seriously, you're so obsessed you work that into your attempts to insult people who have nothing to do with trans people. Eric Erickson said, I used to be a fan of Travis Kelce, not anymore.
I was watching the Bills game today. It was in the first commercial break. Makes me sick!
What, the Bud Light or the COVID commercial? The COVID shot commercial. God, they're so obsessed. Bless his heart, the horse whisperer. Dude, we can almost hear how tiny your penis is. Maybe tone down the projection a little. Yeah,
Clay Travis is upset. Yeah, because Clay Travis is a real man, because he made boy children.
Oh, Jesus. Well, we had to have some Titanic Tuesday material, didn't we? Stephen New York with the obvious answer. Who gives an F what Taylor Swift thinks? I'm thinking her 270 million followers do. It strikes me that this is a number these fuckers are taking too lightly. Yeah. Do you remember when the K-pop fans fucked up a Nitwit Nero event? Back in the 20 campaign, was it? They got all the free tickets. And then started posting, what was it, goat memes? Good times. Good times. They are dainty and delicate, though, these little maggots, aren't they? Taylor is brilliant, beautiful, richer than any of these dweeb dude bros will ever be, and willing to use her influence to save democracy. And in private, she probably makes their withered old members jump like a snake in a microwave. Hey, there's Larry in Liberalville. Thanks again, Larry. We're trying to get that other $150 in here in the next 12 minutes. Nitwit Nero and a Glock. If Trump has a Glock, maybe we should forewarn the people on Fifth Avenue, New York. He mentioned that sometime in the past. Larry in Liberalville. Not to make fun of a concerning situation. I understand. I love the way... I love the way the synergy works here. I mentioned we're still 150 away from Larry and Liberalville's matching challenge this evening. And immediately, I get a question. How's the fundraising? $150 away. And as we move toward wrapping things up, it's time to check in with John Fetterman again, who is trolling not just the maggots in the Senate, but other ones as well. I'm looking at you, Joe, to the Manchin born. As I pointed out, I said don't expect, remember, this is a program where I get to be wrong sometimes, and I'm not ashamed of it. Kind of done with shame. I said Friday, don't look for anybody to call for Bob Menendez to step down. John Fetterman then proved me entirely wrong by calling for Bob Menendez to step down. And he's not, and then he returned Bob Menendez's donation from his PAC, stuffed into envelopes, $5,000. Hey, thank you. Our anonymous friend has taken us down to $100. We got $100 to go in 10 minutes, and we will qualify for the second day in a row. And if we meet all these challenges, by Jove, we will finish September fully funded, the first such month since April. Thank you, kind anonymous friend. And thank you, Relps. We're down to 75. This is doable. $75 more gets turned into 150, and the whole 200 gets turned into 4. It's fantastic. Well, so having done that, John Fetterman is now going, oh, this is good. Because remember, last week, the sky, you know, the government's about to shut down, the sky is falling. But there was still time for Joe to the Manchin born to focus on the real priorities and carp about the way John Fetterman dresses and the dress code and the Senate will die. You know, just the Senate is a fragile institution. The Senate would cease to be if we got rid of an anti-democratic thing called the filibuster. It's always been a filibuster. Filibuster in June, call on heavy soon. Oh, for God's sakes. And then last week, the Senate was going to discorporate and pass away if John Fetterman didn't put on a tie. Fetterman responded and said, listen, I'll show up next week in a suit if you fuckwits will stop... I'm sorry, it wasn't fuckwits. It was jagoffs. We'll stop screwing around and stop this shutdown. and fully fund Ukraine and their attempt to continue to survive. So, today, noting the silence of his colleagues in the Senate, John Fetterman said, "This week, I hope to see my colleagues fully address the alleged systemic corruption of Senator Menendez with the same vigor and velocity they brought to concerns about our dress code." I wonder if people like Joe to the Manchin Born have enough self-awareness to realize how badly he's being trolled. And like I said before, I really want him to walk up to John Fetterman, have to crane his neck back up to where his full neck is exposed, and explain to John Fetterman that, by God, he doesn't appreciate that, and we don't do things like that down in West Virginia because we got bipartisan civility down there. God, and then got to lower his head again so he can get some more oxygen. It would be a beautiful thing. All right. We did it. With 6.5 minutes to spare. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Relps. Thank you, our anonymous friend. Thank you, those of you who jumped in earlier. Larry in Liberalville's challenge is met for Tuesday. We are 2 days out of 5 away from something truly miraculous. Thank you. Fetterman, Stephen, New York, says, "Love me some him." He did postdoc work in trolling. Yeah, may have done it at WVU back when we had a postdoc trolling department, but that has since been dismantled and it's up on blocks in E. Gordon Gee's yard. Oh. He's destroying the collegiality of the Senate. Yes. So sad. So many millionaires having so much butt hurt. And the trolling is everywhere. Fonnie Willis is now trolling Mark Meadows. A brief she filed yesterday in federal court where Mark Meadows is appealing the ruling of the bench to have his case transferred to federal court. Fonnie Willis, who has shown that she herself has postdoc training in trolling with the letter that she wrote to Jim Jacketoff Jordan, "Understanding as I do that you are a member of no bar, perhaps this book might help you." Well, in her filing Monday, following a full evidentiary hearing and having failed to meet his low burden before the Federal District Court for the Northern District of Georgia, appellant Mark Randall Meadows now asks this court to apply a jurisdiction designed to insulate federal authority from state interference to a case concerning precisely the opposite. Appellant and his co-defendants engaged in activities designed to accomplish federal meddling in matters of state authorities. He was able to point to no law, no constitutional provision, and no lawful duty which authorized him to take the actions he did, and his testimony at the evidentiary hearing in this case underscored the case against his removal rather than for it. That is very fancy lawyer speak for, dude, you fucked yourself. And you're not very good at this. That's what failed to meet his own very low bar means. I'm sorry, failed to meet his low burden. In other words, you might have had a chance, but you're too much a dumb, stupid maggot to even do that right. It's almost like Captain Kirk taunting Khan, but you keep missing the target. All right. That's that. One more thing, and then out. Enter Olivia Troy. We've talked this evening about the way maggots talk about women, whether it be Cassidy Hutchinson or Tay-Tay. Well, Olivia Troy has added her voice to the mix. She was the Homeland Security staffer for former Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek. Some producer at CNN got hold of her to book her on to talk to Aaron Burnett about Cassidy Hutchinson and what she had said about the behavior of men in the maggot White House. It wasn't good. Olivia Troy had the same experience.
So, Olivia, you know, in this book, we are learning some new things, right? She's talking about things that we had heard about and adding more, but she's also putting new things in. Of course, allegations that she was assaulted by, groped by Rudy Giuliani on January 6th, first and foremost among them. She said they were backstage at Trump's speech near the White House. He puts his hand under her blazer and her skirt, and he's leering up at her. I mean, the writing is captivating in a horrific and disgusting way. Did that surprise you when you read that, Olivia?
Well, I certainly found it completely despicable and disgusting. It actually enraged me when I heard about this, and I could just, I was so angry. And I also felt, just as a, you know, as someone who is senior staff in the White House, thinking about the environment of what all women faced in the Trump White House, and also just someone who's starting out in their career, that's the last thing that I want someone like Cassidy to face. But unfortunately, this was the environment that we were in, and it was very misogynistic. It doesn't surprise me. I mean, look, I sat in meetings with the president himself where he would pretty much examine every woman in the room. He would look at us from head to toe and look at what we were wearing. Rudy Giuliani, similar personality, as well as the ilk of Peter Navarro. I mean, they're out there still today, this past weekend, referring to us in very derogatory terms. This is how these men view women. And I just want to say, look, when it comes to Cassidy Hutchinson, she was one of the most critical members of the staff in the West Wing, regardless of what they may try to say and however they may try to paint us. That's how they do it. They try to be disparaging in these terms. And so when these attacks come out against her and they refute these things, she doesn't have a reason to lie. And I'll say she was critical. She would call staff in the White House. She would call me, who was senior staff on Mike Pence's staff, and task me at times, because when she called, she was speaking for Mark Meadows. So I'm just saying this because she was of critical stature in the West Wing in this operation, and I believe everything that she says because she's lived it.
Right, and we
can't get much plainer than that. And I want to be clear about something. Yeah, these are MAGA women. These are women who, look, a desire for power and status and prestige and professional advancement, that's not the sole province of men. These women were trying to access power in their own right, and, you know, as was said of Ginger Rogers, doing it backwards in heels. And even if they signed on knowing what garbage Nitwit Nero was, that does not make it okay for what was done to them to have been done. They had a right to a workplace where they would not be leered at by disgusting, skeevy, gross, old dudes. Because it is in fact possible to be an older guy and not be utterly disgusting. But those people generally don't vote Republican. Those men generally don't vote MAGA. And so it must have been horrifying, nauseating, as Aaron Burnett put it. And you know what? Hell, working at CNN, I bet Aaron Burnett has her own horrifying, nauseating stories. We know for a fact that practically every woman that worked in at Fox from the 90s into, up to 2000 and perhaps beyond has her stories. And the larger question is, why? Why is this still a thing? Why is this not disincentivized? Why is it so hard for guys to, particularly and especially maggot men, to understand that the behavior is not only improper, but odious and disgusting? And it has everything to do with how Republicans view women in the first place. Baby factories, incubators. Not fully autonomous. Now, how dare Steve Bannon suggest that Cassidy Hutchinson has any explaining to do whatsoever about the fact that she didn't want to be hit on by a living, breathing sleaze bag like Matt, it just gates worse. Who apparently chased and did business with an underage sex worker. Just throwing that out there. So that's the program. A couple of extra minutes there. Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much. We've got a fighting chance this month. Thank you. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors and our challenge makers. Thank you to our, well, each and every member of the community who joins in this conversation in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, like us on Spotify, like us on Apple Podcasts, like us on any platform where you download the podcast. And leave a comment. It really does help. Bring more voices into the community that way. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thanks, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. I gotta try to get hold of Ben if I can. See if we can keep the White Rose feed alive for a little bit longer. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Schedule your booster, your flu shot, your RSV vaccine. Let's all get through this winter healthy. Wear your mask. Keep several on hand. Order your free COVID tests, covidtests.gov. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you wherever you go, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance wherever possible. And if some guy who is never ever going to even garner the vaguest of interest from Taylor Swift comes through, you know what? She's homely. Now, avoid that dude like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Love you, Wayne. Later.